Welcome to the Messianic Message. I'm Kimberly Rogers Brown. Inside Hebrew Roots, Messianic Judaism, and Judaism is a false doctrine that says Yahweh's people can do the feasts anywhere on earth that they want to. This doctrine's needed destruction is becoming urgent, and you'll see why in a little bit. Given that the Great Tribulation may be only a few years away at best, or perhaps even imminent, having this doctrine still with us is dangerous. Why? It's because some of the Lord's promises of protection and deliverance are tied to us attending the feasts in Jerusalem. I'll give you those scriptures in a little bit. Just know that where we do the feasts is paramount in Yahweh's commandments. Aside from the Great Tribulation, though, we are also on the cusp of the ingathering, which is a Great Tribulation event. But actually, the ingathering is already in process. The numbers of feast attendees go up every feast, not every year, but at every feast. And Yahweh is moving more of His people to Israel and greater Israel. He is already gathering those who are listening. To understand, though, the false doctrine and how we can undo it in our lives, we must first know how we got here and why it is so important. It is too easy to convince ourselves that Yahweh is happy to have our praise anywhere we are on the earth at any time. But this is not the case. This is especially so if you have any inkling of what goes on in Jerusalem and in the temple. There is only one authorized location for His celebrations. That place is Jerusalem, the place of Yahweh's name. The history of this false doctrine begins with the Israelite tax revolt in 1 Kings chapter 12. It wasn't the tax revolt that Jeroboam led against Rehoboam that got the house of Israel into trouble. It was what Jeroboam did after that rebellion when he had been installed as king of the house of Israel. 1 Kings chapter 12, verse 26. And Jeroboam said in his heart, "Now shall the kingdom return to the house of David. If this people go up to do sacrifice in the house of the Lord at Jerusalem, then shall the heart of this people turn again to their Lord, even to Rehoboam, king of Judah, and they shall kill me and go again to Rehoboam, king of Judah." Whereupon the king took counsel and made two calves of gold and said to them, "It is too much for you to go up to Jerusalem. Behold your gods, O Israel, which brought you up out of the land of Egypt." Oh, remember those golden calves in the desert? Verse 29. And he set the one in Bethel, and the other put he in Dan. And he made a house of high places, and made priests of the lowest of the people, which were not of the sons of Levi. And Jeroboam ordained a feast in the eighth month, on the 15th day of the month, like unto the feast that is in Judah, Jerusalem. And he offered upon the altar. So did he in Bethel, sacrificing to the calves that he had made. And he placed in Bethel the priests of the high places which he had made. So he offered upon the altar which he had made in Bethel, the 15th day of the 8th month, even in the month which he had devised in his own heart, and ordained a feast to the children of Israel, and he offered upon the altar and burnt incense. Do you realize what Jeroboam really accomplished here? He became the type and shadow of the Antichrist. He defiled the altar by keeping Yahweh's people away from it and Jerusalem. He changed the feast times and seasons and their locations. In fact, the feasts is what Jeroboam's altars were all about. He set up golden calves in Beit El and Dan, putting Yahweh's name on them, and even created his own priesthood in which he was a king priest serving at his own altar. I want to go to Leviticus 17, verse 3, and just explain what that meant for Jeroboam and those who followed him. Verse 3, what man soever there be of the house of Israel. That's interesting. The house of Israel is what we're talking about here, and Leviticus is addressing the whole house of Israel, which at that time included 12 tribes, but then later 10 tribes were the house of Israel. And so the Lord here in Leviticus is addressing the whole house of Israel, but it's the house of Israel that defiled this commandment. So what man soever there is of the house of Israel that kills an ox or lamb or goat in the camp, or that kills it outside of the camp and brings it not to the door of the tabernacle of the congregation to offer an offering to the Lord before the tabernacle of the Lord, blood shall be imputed to that man. Oh, that means that if you kill an animal as a sacrifice anywhere else on earth besides the tabernacle or the temple, you are a murderer. It says he has shed blood, and that man shall be cut off from among his people, to the end that the children of Israel may bring their sacrifices which they offer in the open field, even that they may bring them to the Lord, to the door of the tabernacle of the congregation, to the priest, and offer them for peace offerings to the Lord. And the priest shall sprinkle the blood upon the altar of the Lord at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation, and burn the fat for a sweet savor to the Lord. And they shall no more offer their sacrifices to devils, after whom they have gone a-whoring. This shall be a statute forever unto them throughout their generations. Thus, Jeroboam made Yahweh's feasts to be at different times and in different locations, and handed them over to devils by sacrificing outside of Jerusalem. If we remember nothing else, remember that we can never take our sacrifices anywhere but to Yahweh's specified place, which is now and forevermore Jerusalem. The false doctrine that the feasts being done anywhere we want to because we are in exile comes from a misunderstanding of the feast instructions, which come in two parts. One, go to the place of Yahweh's name. And two, your men are to appear before the Lord to present their tithes, offerings, and sacrifices. It is wrongly taught that only the men need to go to Jerusalem. But a careful reading of the scriptures in context will tell you that the entire family is to go, including widows, orphans, and the Levites who live in your cities. Once the whole family is in Jerusalem, then the men present themselves with the family's tithes, offerings, and sacrifices. Jeroboam's apostasy is compounded now because there is no temple and we can't sacrifice right now, so therefore people assume there is no need to go to Jerusalem because they wrongly assume that the feasts are only about doing sacrifices. I don't have enough time to read all the scriptures in the Torah and Tanakh that tell us where we are to go for the feasts, but know this. The instructions are for us to go to the place he shall choose, the place of his name. Never, did Yahweh tell us to do the feasts at the tabernacle or the temple? He told us to do them at the place of His name and bring our sacrifices. Why is this distinction so important? Well, I will answer that question with a question. What if Yahweh had put His name on the temple, a place that can be easily destroyed? Any place with Yahweh's name on it that would be destroyed would destroy His name from the earth. Jerusalem was never completely destroyed. Even after its prophesied destructions, it continued to be occupied by someone. Jerusalem is one of the oldest continuously occupied cities on the earth. Thus, Yahweh putting His name on Jerusalem ensured that His name would never be destroyed from the earth and that He would have a capital that could be restored in the end of days. This is why we don't need a temple to go ahead and travel to Jerusalem for the feasts to do Yahweh's instructions, even though we can't bring sacrifices right now. However, we can do everything else that He instructed, like rejoice before Him and bring our praises before Him. So what did Yahweh say about us in the end of days? Let's go to Deuteronomy chapter 30, verse 1. And it shall come to pass, when all these things are come upon you, the blessing and the curse which I have set before you, and you shall call them to mind among all the nations where the Lord your God has driven you. And you shall return to the Lord your God, and shall obey His voice according to all that I command you this day, you and your children, with all your heart and with all your soul, that then the Lord your God will turn your captivity and have compassion on you, and will return and gather you from all the nations where the Lord your God has scattered you. In the end of days, Yahweh is not looking for us to be able to do everything He commanded, but for us to do everything we can to obey Him. That's the with all your heart part. See, this is a precondition for our return from exile. So we don't need the temple in order to appear in Jerusalem, but we do need to appear in Jerusalem even without the temple, because there are still instructions of the feasts that we can do. We can present ourselves before Yahweh. He said, His eyes and heart are there forever, in 1 Kings 9:3 and 2 Chronicles 7:16. When there is a temple there, it is still His eyes and heart that know you are there. So nothing has changed in this regard. One of the most destructive teachings is that Deuteronomy 12:21 says you can do the feasts wherever you are in exile. This is the atrocious teaching I repented of 2 years ago, because that is not what it says. Deuteronomy chapter 12 deals with what to do if you can't get your animals, tithes, and offerings to Jerusalem because the Lord has blessed you so much. Deuteronomy chapter 12 says nothing about what to do if you can't go. You not going is not an option. Verse 21 explains what you do with your animal that you have decided cannot be taken to Jerusalem with you. You repurpose it as simply meat. You slaughter it. It's not a sacrifice because no blood is going on the altar. It's going into the ground. It's not a sacrifice because both clean and unclean people can eat it. Unclean people are not permitted to eat the sacrifices. And in chapter 14, we learn what you do when you have to go to Jerusalem without your animals and your tithes. In Deuteronomy 14:22, it says, "You shall truly tithe all the increase of your seed that the field brings forth year by year. And you shall eat before the Lord your God." See, this is one of those things that you do in Jerusalem before the Lord your God, is you eat in the place which he shall choose to place his name there. The tithe of your corn, wine, oil, and the firstlings of your herds and of your flocks, that you may learn to fear the Lord your God always. You know what? Going to the place where he chooses to put his name, which is Jerusalem, teaches you to fear him. You don't want to go to Jerusalem. You don't want to fear God. Verse 24. "And if the way be too long for you, so that you are not able to carry it, or if the place be too far from you, which the Lord your God shall choose to set his name there, when the Lord your God has blessed you, then you shall turn it into money, and bind up the money in your hand, and go to the place that the Lord your God shall choose. And you shall bestow that money for whatsoever your soul lusts after, for oxen, or for sheep, wine, strong drink, or whatever your soul desires, and you shall eat there before the Lord your God. And you shall rejoice." That's another thing we're supposed to do when we go to Jerusalem, along with a couple of other things I'll mention later. "You and your household," not just the men, "and the Levite that is within your gates, you shall not forsake him, for he has no part nor inheritance with you." Oh, so you turn your sacrificial firstborn lamb that is required to be offered to Yahweh, along with your tithes, into cash. How do you do that? You sell them. Then you take that money to Jerusalem with you and buy a proper firstborn lamb from the temple flock to replace the one you ate for dinner the night before you traveled to Jerusalem. For a further list of excuses people use for not going to Jerusalem for the feasts, there's a link here in Beast Watch News. Some people do have valid reasons for not going, and I will tell you what those are and what to do in a minute. But first, Jerusalem being too far away was Jeroboam's original excuse. This excuse that Jeroboam used to keep his people away from Jerusalem for everything we were supposed to go to Jerusalem for has been the basis for the ongoing rejection of Jerusalem for the feasts for over 2,700 years. The rejection of Jerusalem was the beginning of the house of Israel ending up in exile. Thus, to reverse and defy this rejection is to reverse our exile. Jeroboam's apostasy will be destroyed in the same way it began, by the people defying his doctrine and reversing his decisions and the decisions of their leaders rather than agreeing with them. Today, our religious leaders in Hebrew Roots, Messianic Judaism, and in Judaism say with their mouths that Jerusalem is the place for the feasts, but they fail to do the action of going there themselves. Isaiah 29:13. "Wherefore the Lord said, for as much as this people draw near to me with their mouth and with their lips do honor me, but they have removed their heart far from me, and their fear toward me is taught by the precept of men." Saying but not doing is tantamount to our leaders agreeing with Jeroboam. So they speak with their lips, then do Passover Seders at home, Shavuot and Sukkot, in all kinds of places all over the earth, rather than return to Jerusalem. You need to know that there are special blessings, special help, and deliverance promises for those who go to the feasts in Jerusalem. The first promise I will mention will be about your property. Exodus 34:24. For I will cast out the nations before you and enlarge your borders, neither shall any man desire your land when you go up to appear before the Lord your God 3 times in the year. How much clearer can it be? Our protection from the coming destruction is associated with keeping the Lord's feasts 3 times a year at the place where He put His name. Now, that may be incredulous to you at the moment, but hang on, I'm going to give you the justification for this. Another promise from Yahweh is that attending the feast in Jerusalem has benefit for our children. How often have I heard parents crying over their children who are not in relation with the Father, and they are wondering about their children entering the kingdom? Well, read Hezekiah's letter in 2 Chronicles 30. Read the whole chapter, but allow me to paraphrase what you will find there. Hezekiah sent word to the house of Israel in the north, the tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh, to come to Passover in Jerusalem. The letter specifically said, "Don't be like your ancestors and your relatives who weren't faithful to the Lord God of their ancestors, who, as a result, made them a desolate horror, as you well know. So don't be stiff-necked like your ancestors were. Instead, submit to the Lord, enter His sanctuary that He has sanctified forever, and serve the Lord your God, so that He'll stop being angry with you. If you return to the Lord, your relatives and children will receive compassion from those who took them away captive, and they'll return to this land. Because the Lord is both gracious and compassionate, He will not turn away from you if you return to Him." That last part is what I wanted you to understand. The price of releasing your children's and your other relatives' captivity is for you to go to Jerusalem for the feasts. Now, let's address some valid reasons why you might not be able to go and what to do about it. But first, let's answer that incredulous question that you have about, really, was I telling the truth about God is going to protect your stuff if you go to the feast 3 times a year? Let's learn about Yahweh's principle of attribution. He attributes righteousness, holiness, and all kinds of participation in His kingdom when we have really done very little. We see this principle first with Abraham, who obeyed God, and it was attributed to him for righteousness. From this, we learn that righteousness is attributed, not earned, for obedience. We have to be righteous to enter the kingdom, but we have to also be obedient to Him so that He can attribute righteousness to us. It is what, you know, in an Excel spreadsheet, it would call a circular reference. You really can't get there from here. You have to be righteous, but you have to have attributed righteousness, and you can't earn righteousness. It has to be attributed, and so forth. In the wilderness, a few people worked on the tabernacle, but certainly not all 3 million people were part of its construction. A large number of people contributed to its construction with materials, but not everyone contributed. Only those who were moved to contribute contributed. Yet, the construction of the tabernacle is attributed by Yahweh to the entire congregation. King David, who later gathered building materials for the temple, is attributed with having built the temple, even though he did not build it. And the Jews have an understanding that says when a person repents, it is as if he built the temple. So, you see, Yahweh attributes much to his people for little of their effort. This is important because using the principle that during the millennium, the families of the earth will send representatives to Jerusalem for Sukkot instead of their entire families traveling to Jerusalem, we see that Yahweh will attribute to the Gentiles as if their whole family came when they send a representative. This is a principle we can use too. Yahweh knows we are in exile. He knows many of us are poor. He knows we have financial problems, health issues, job and family problems to deal with. So what are we to do if we truly can't go, as in there truly is a valid reason for not showing up? Take your second tithe. Yes, you should be tithing this way. And give it to someone in your family or congregation who can go in your place. The instruction for this is found in Deuteronomy 14:29, where we are instructed to make sure that certain people get to Jerusalem. These are orphans and widows and Levites. And guess what? Being in exile makes you an orphan or a widow. So, in your congregations or even one member of your family, select someone to go for each feast. Set up a fund to send your representative because Yahweh will attribute to everyone who contributes as if he was in Jerusalem. The next instruction is to mourn. Zephaniah 3:18 says, I will gather them that are sorrowful for the solemn assembly, the Moedim, who are of you and to whom the reproach of it is a burden. Even the Jews mourn in Jerusalem during the feasts for the loss of Yahweh's full complement of temple rituals. They mourn that they can't keep all of the sacrifices at the feasts. They mourn because all their brethren from the other tribes are not there. In exile, we should be mourning all the more. We should be sitting in sackcloth and ashes because we're not able to get to Jerusalem. There is a hard truth to face that our people seem unwilling to look at. They spend thousands of dollars going to feasts outside of Jerusalem. That money should be spent getting to Jerusalem or helping to send others. Remember, exile is Yahweh's punishment of his people. It is designed to teach you to want what Yahweh wants. He wants you in Jerusalem. But sadly, most of Yahweh's people want their Passovers to continue in their homes from year to year and their Sukkots to be wherever they decide is a good vacation spot. Stop it! Destruction is coming. You listen to this report because you know the destruction is coming. Well, I have to tell you the truth about this destruction, and part of it is that you attending the feasts where Yahweh told you to is a chunk of the possibility of your survival through the Great Tribulation. Also, contrary to what is being said of me on Facebook at the moment, it is not my belief that you go to hell for not attending the feast in Jerusalem. This is not a salvation issue. However, it is an obedience issue. In fact, this is one of the last and perhaps the biggest issue to face the two houses before the Great Tribulation starts. What we do about Jerusalem will directly affect whether or not we escape destruction. We need our teachers to teach by example rather than just giving lip service to Jerusalem. They say, go to Jerusalem, but where do they keep the feasts? Anywhere. Often these leaders set up their own camps and get people to come there instead of to Jerusalem. They don't teach doing the action of going, yet they teach the Sabbath by doing it, not just talking about it. They teach kosher by doing it, not just talking about it. They teach these instructions with their words, but the important part of teaching is to do. Doing the feasts in Jerusalem is not happening with many Hebrew roots teachers. These same teachers, though, still condemn Jeroboam and the altars he built, the altars around which the northern tribes performed their feasts in the times and locations that were changed by Jeroboam. If it's okay for us to do the feasts just anywhere, why then do our teachers condemn Jeroboam while continuing doing what Jeroboam did? You and I are both teachers. Did you know that? We are all teachers and lights to the world. But if we prefer our darkness, our exile, our diaspora over Jerusalem, what does that say to the world? I wonder what would happen if all the leaders and teachers would actually just go to Jerusalem for a feast, all showing up at the same time, leaving behind those who either can't or won't go. That would be the best teacher of all. New roots believers just coming out of the church would quickly learn the lesson that, oh, we go to Jerusalem for the feasts and we mourn when we can't. Contrary to popular opinion, apostate Sukkot camps are not the best place for people to learn to go to Jerusalem for the feasts or to learn about the feasts at all. All that teaches them is to go to any place you want to go. We can do teachings and midrashes about the feasts anytime. We don't have to do them in locations that will end up getting us and our new roots converts killed. When Hezekiah sent out his letter, Ephraim, Manasseh, and Zebulun mocked King Hezekiah's couriers. Those who say we don't have to go to Jerusalem for the feasts, that we can do them anywhere, are mocking. The people from the northern tribes who went to Jerusalem for the feast effectively reversed the curse of Jeroboam in their lives. What those people did is what we must do now. We must defy Jeroboam because this will reverse the scattering. Let me give you an example of what I'm saying. Imagine that a glass bowl was dropped and shattered on the floor. Now imagine that it was filmed, and think about what the bowl coming back together on the film will look like. It will be an exact reversal. Now a person would normally pick up the pieces, but this puts them in different order. This is not restoration. And the little splinters would be swept up and lost. But Yahweh's plan is the exact reversal of the dispersion. Not even the splinters will be lost. Another thing to note is that since we will be going to his feasts in Jerusalem in the millennium, or be punished, we should be doing them in Jerusalem now. Going to the feast in Jerusalem is our role in exactly reversing the sin of Jeroboam. This actually is key to the continuing in gathering, because at the feast in Jerusalem is the only place where all of Yahweh's people gather together in what we might call a big family reunion. Not only do Yahweh's eyes see us there and his heart feels us there, but all of our other brethren meet us there. Voila! Reunification. In fact, Jerusalem is Yahweh's regathering place, is it not? We won't be regathered to Beit El or Dan, will we? Isn't it that Jeroboam's desire was to keep people from reunifying in Jerusalem? How is this false doctrine connected to what is happening between Israel and Iran? It is because of the sudden destruction that is coming. Through this message, Yahweh is giving his people another chance to do his will. The last stronghold of the Hebrew Roots movement is the feasts in Jerusalem. Now, will the current upheaval between the king of the north and Israel turn into that prophesied war, or will it continue to be a series of skirmishes for some months or years yet? I don't know. But I'm hoping Yahweh will give his people who want to escape their destruction time to go on record as having done everything possible to show up in Jerusalem for at least one feast. It would be even better if they would work toward being there for every feast from now on. Yahweh sent Jonah to the house of Israel, who were present in Assyria before his final destruction of them, the final captivity by Sennacherib. Jonah was not sent to a bunch of Gentiles. No, he was sent to the house of Israel, who had been divorced and by reason of that divorce had become the same as Gentiles and were thus called Gentiles. The captivity of the house of Israel did not happen in one swoop of Assyria into Israel. It happened over time. Yet Yahweh sent a warning messenger to his people in Assyria for them to repent and return to him. But did Yahweh just want people to return to Israel? Or did he want them to repent and defy Jeroboam's rebellion and return to Jerusalem? Of course, the answer is Jerusalem. Yahweh is once again calling his people who see the destruction coming. They are in exile. He has sent a prophet to call them back, not to Israel alone, but to Jerusalem. Let me tell you now that if you reject Jerusalem, you won't be allowed in Israel. Jerusalem is the capital of Israel, both of the UN-created Israel and the Kingdom of Israel, the center and capital of the earth, and it is the center and capital of the universe. Going to Jerusalem for the feasts should be seen as an honor and privilege, not something to be debated about whether it is necessary to attend a feast when the king decides a feast is to be thrown. Remember this truism. When our starting premise is incorrect, our conclusion will also be incorrect. What the Sabbath was to our Christian belief, the feasts are to our Hebraic beliefs. What is our starting premise? that we don't have to go to Jerusalem for the feasts, that we can do them anywhere. That premise is leading the majority of people to a false conclusion and a terrible outcome. See you in Jerusalem. This has been Kimberly Rogers Brown from TheMessianicMessage.com. Thank you for listening.